The Royal Breakfast. There was a frantic scurry among the palace servants when orders were received from the queen that a 24-foot giant must be seated with her majesty in the great ballroom within the next half hour. The butler, an imposing personage named Mr. Tibbs, was in supreme command of all the palace servants, and he did the best he could in the short time available. A man does not rise to become the queen's butler unless he is gifted with extraordinary ingenuity, adaptability, versatility, dexterity, cunning, sophistication, sagacity, discretion, and a host of other talents that neither you nor I possess. Mr. Tibbs had them all. He was in the butler's pantry sipping an early morning glass of light ale when the order reached him. In a split second, he had made the following calculations in his head. If a normal 6-foot man requires a 3-foot high table to eat off, a 24-foot giant would require a 12-foot high table. And if a 6-foot man requires a chair with a 2-foot high seat, a 24-foot giant would require a chair with an 8-foot high seat. Everything, Mr. Tibbs told himself, must be multiplied by 4. 2 breakfast eggs must become 8. 4 rashers of bacon must become 16. 3 pieces of toast must become 12, and so on. These calculations about food were immediately passed on to Monsieur Papillon, the royal chef. Mr. Tibbs skimmed into the ballroom. Butlers don't walk, they skim over the ground. Followed by a whole army of footmen. The footmen all wore knee breeches, and every one of them displayed beautifully rounded calves and ankles. There's no way you can become a royal footman unless you have a well-turned ankle. It was the first thing they look at when you're interviewed. "Push the grand piano into the center of the room," Mr. Tibbs whispered. Butlers never raised their voices above the softest whisper. 4 footmen moved the piano. "Now fetch the large chest of drawers and put it on top of the piano," Mr. Tibbs whispered. The other footman fetched a very fine Chippendale mahogany chest of drawers and placed it on top of the piano. "That will be his chair," Mr. Tibbs whispered. "It's exactly 8 feet off the ground. Now we shall make a table upon which this gentleman may eat his breakfast in comfort. Fetch me 4 very tall grandfather clocks. There are plenty of them around the palace. Let each clock be 12 feet high." 16 footmen spread out around the palace to find the clocks. They were not easy to carry and required 4 footmen to each one. "Place the 4 clocks in a rectangle 8 feet by 4 alongside the grand piano," Mr. Tibbs whispered. The footman did so. "Now fetch me the young prince's ping-pong table," Mr. Tibbs whispered. The ping-pong table was carried in. "Unscrew its legs and take them away," Mr. Tibbs whispered. This was done. "Now place the ping-pong table on top of the 4 grandfather clocks," Mr. Tibbs whispered. To manage this, the footman had to stand on stepladders. Mr. Tibbs stood back to survey the new furniture. "None of it is in the, classic style," he whispered, "but it'll have to do." He gave orders that a damask tablecloth should be draped over the ping-pong table, and in the end it looked really quite elegant after all. At this point, Mr. Tibbs was seen to hesitate. The footmen all stared at him aghast. Butlers never hesitate, not even when they are faced with the most impossible problems. It's their job to be totally decisive at all times. "Knives, and forks, and spoons," Mr. Tibbs was heard to mutter. "Our cutlery will be like little pins in his hands." But Mr. Tibbs didn't hesitate for long. "Tell the head gardener," he whispered, "that I require immediately a brand new, unused garden fork, and also a spade. And for a knife, we shall use a great sword hanging on the wall in the morning room. But clean the sword well first. It was last used to cut off the head of King Charles I, and there may still be a little dried blood on the blade." When all this had been accomplished, Mr. Tibbs stood near the center of the ballroom, casting his expert butler's eye over the scene. Had he forgotten anything? He certainly had. What about a coffee cup for the large gentleman? "Fetch me," he whispered, "the biggest jug you can find in the kitchen." A splendid 1-gallon porcelain water jug was brought in and placed on the giant's table beside the garden fork and the garden spade and the great sword. So much for the giant. Mr. Tibbs had footmen move a small, delicate table and 2 chairs alongside the giant's table. This was for the queen and for Sophie. The fact that the giant's table and chair towered far above the smaller table simply could not be helped. All these arrangements were only just completed when the queen, now fully dressed in a trim skirt and cashmere cardigan, entered the ballroom holding Sophie by the hand. A pretty blue dress that had once belonged to one of the princesses had been found for Sophie, and to make her look prettier still, the queen had picked up a superb sapphire brooch from her dressing table and had pinned it on the left side of Sophie's chest. The big, friendly giant followed behind them, but he had an awful job getting through the door. He had to squeeze himself through on his hands and knees, with two footmen pushing him from behind and two pulling him from the front. But he got through in the end. He had removed his black cloak and got rid of his trumpet, and was now wearing his ordinary simple clothes. As he walked across the ballroom, he had to stoop quite a lot to avoid hitting the ceiling. Because of this, he failed to notice an enormous crystal chandelier. Crash! Went his head right into the chandelier. A shower of glass fell upon the poor BFG. Gone hammers and bog winkles, he cried. What was that? It was Louis XV, the queen said, looking slightly put out. Oh, he's never been in a house before, Sophie said. Mr. Tibbs scowled. He directed four footmen to clear up the mess. Then, with a disdainful little wave of his hand, he indicated to the giant that he should seat himself on top of the chest of drawers on top of the grand piano. What a fizz, whizzing, flush, bunking seat, cried the BFG. I's going to be bug as a snug in a rug up here. Does he always speak like that? The queen asked. Oh, quite often, Sophie said. He gets tangled up with his words. The BFG sat down on the chest of drawers piano and gazed in wonder around the great ballroom. By gumdrops, he cried. What a spliffling wopsy room we is in. It is so gigantous your size needing bicirculars and telescopes to see what is going on at the other end. Footmen arrived carrying silver trays with fried eggs, bacon, sausages, and fried potatoes. At this point, Mr. Tibbs suddenly realized that in order to serve the BFG at his 12-foot-high grandfather clock table, he would have to climb to the top of one of the tall stepladders. What's more, he must do it balancing a huge warm plate on the palm of one hand and holding a gigantic silver coffee pot in the other. A normal man would have flinched at the thought of it. But good butlers never flinch. Up he went, up and up and up. The queen and Sophie watched him with great interest. It is possible they were both secretly hoping he would lose his balance and go crashing to the floor. But good butlers never crash. At the top of the ladder, Mr. Tibbs, balancing like an acrobat, poured the BFG's coffee and placed an enormous plate before him. On the plate, there were 8 eggs, 12 sausages, 16 rashers of bacon, and a heap of fried potatoes.
What is this, please, your magister? The BFG asked, peering down at the queen.
He's never eaten anything except snores cumbers before in his life, Sophie explained. Ugh, they taste revolting.
The dude seemed to have stunted his growth, the queen said.
The BFG grabbed the garden spade and scooped up all the eggs, sausages, bacon, and potatoes in one go and shoveled them into his enormous mouth.
By goggles, he cried. This stuff is making snozcumbers taste like swatch wallop.
The queen glanced up, frowning. Mr. Tibbs looked down at his toes and his lips moved in silent prayer.
That was only one chitchy little bite, the BFG said. Is you having any more of this delunctuous grubble in your cupboard, Magister?
Tibbs, the queen said, showing true regal hospitality, fetch the gentleman another dozen fried eggs and a dozen sausages. Mr. Tibbs swam out of the room muttering unspeakable words to himself and wiped his brow with a white handkerchief. The BFG lifted the huge jug and took a swallow.
Blah!
He shouted, blowing a mouthful across the ballroom.
Please, what is this horrible sweet bill I is drinking, Magister?
It was coffee, the queen told him, freshly roasted.
It's filsome, the BFG cried out. Where is the frobscottle?
The what? The queen asked.
Delumptious fizzy frobscottle, the BFG answered. Everyone must be drinking frobscottle with breakfast, Magister. Then we can all be whiz-bopping happily together afterwards.
What does he mean? The queen said, frowning at Sophie. What is whiz-popping?